connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio. Now on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Dan. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good this morning. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. So this was a very interesting story, kind of a talker so far this morning. Over in New York City, they've got licenses up for grabs that they're going to be giving out within the next year, I think, for casinos. And we were reading about how Saks Fifth Avenue, I don't know if you heard this, but Saks Fifth Avenue would like to put a casino in the top three floors of its building. And so that's one of the places. Another one is right across the street from Citi Field. The owner of the Mets would like to put something there. There's another pitch for something near Times Square. So there's a bunch. And it made me think. I was like, okay, now hold on. You know, it wasn't that long ago. It was 2019 that Mayor Ganim was making another pitch to bring a casino. And basically, if people didn't follow the fallout of that, the legislature did not go forward with it. They had at that time approved going forward with I believe it was East Haven. They wanted to put a casino in East Haven. And then that fell through because the tribes had to agree with the state that they were going to allow sports betting in sports gambling, online gambling to happen, and they would nix the casino. Do you know if Mayor Ganim or anyone in the city has talked again about repitching a casino for Southern Connecticut for having something in Bridgeport? Has that come up again?
I haven't heard that, Melissa. Just real quick though, before I respond formally, but you know, it's funny with the I saw the news on Saks, and you know, in Manhattan, I think there's potentially three potential casinos and licenses that they may give, and it's just interesting to see how a lot of traditional businesses, as we think, you know, are trying to evolve. Right? I mean, people are shopping differently, and so anything we can do to draw people in, obviously, is the way forward, I think, for a lot of these businesses. And you see it everywhere. Yeah, there's little subtle things, but it's, you know, it's the start of just evolving with the times, you know, and how people, you know, their habits are. So I found it super interesting. I saw it the other day. My wife was like, right, but I were talking about it. We said, wow, you know, I guess that could work.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that, Dan, because I kind of thought the same thing. I know since the pandemic, and especially depending on what your political stance is, I mean, there's one political party that basically feels like New York City has become the next Gotham. That's, you know, how they portray it, and that's how they look at it. And look, crime is up in New York, and I think, you know, the pandemic, people, I mean, they flooded out of New York as quick as they could, and a lot of them came here to Connecticut. So I think we've seen that New York is just not what it was. I mean, another six, which is something we're going to talk about as well, another six major Broadway shows, one of which starring Hugh Jackman, just shut down this week because they just can't get themselves back on track after COVID. So I think you're right. I think New York is like, listen, we were always, you know, the city. And we just are not rebounding as quick as we'd like to. So now here we go. We're going to allow three casinos in Manhattan or in the New York City area. And I mean, the fact that they're even thinking of one in Times Square, what does that tell you? I mean, Times Square is one of the busiest places in all of America. And they're like, you know what, let's slap a casino in there. Let's do that. I mean, it's I think your perspective is straight up. It's right on.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, especially with the economy and, you know, the trends that we're seeing with interest rates and inflation. And yeah, I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon. But it doesn't mean that there's, as you know, the ebbs and flows of the economy is just how it is. And, you know, in towns and cities, they evolve with that, and they try to pick up on the industries and the sectors that make them thrive. That's why, you know, the BRBC, we're really, really focused on manufacturing right now, as well as a lot of Connecticut. It's a big part of our economy. But going back to your original question, not to derail the conversation.
No, you're fine.
I have not heard any news on conversations with a potential casino in Bridgeport. I know there's still some intricacies with the agreement and the arrangement that the state of Connecticut has with the tribal community, particularly around the sports betting. And then that's the other thing too is, online gaming has just changed the whole industry, you know, and that was really one of the sparks of why Bridgeport or even any other town in Connecticut was looking at issuing a license if it was available for a casino, because the income that the state of Connecticut was receiving from the tribal casinos prior to the pandemic has been on a steady decline because that revenue was tied to slots. And people just are not playing slots as much anymore. So if you go to the casino floors, you'll see the footprint of the slots are very, very small now because you can do it all on your phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the online gaming has really taken over. And at the casinos, live and in person, it's the gaming tables. And the state of Connecticut at that time was not receiving any revenue from the gaming tables, just on slots. That's kind of why this whole discussion and debate came up with, okay, we need to do something else to help boost up those dollars from gaming in the state of Connecticut. And I think, you know, I don't want to get political. I don't, you know, this is just my opinion, but I do think a lot of that discussion, Melissa, was because people were angling to get the exclusivity on the sports betting in this state. I think they saw that on the horizon, and I think everyone was jockeying for position and trying to get their hands around sports betting and who can control that. So, ultimately, as we know, the tribal communities are very involved with that as well. And we see it now, you know, sports betting. And, it's sad to say in some degree. I know we were talking about marijuana last week, but, you know, it's like drugs, alcohol, you know, gaming, all these things that. And I say it's sad because, like, we were watching football, of course, with the playoffs this past weekend, you know, and my son's buddies from high school are all talking about, there's 9 points on this game. And I'm like, really? You guys know this stuff? In high school you're talking about this?
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting, yeah, to see how all this impacts our culture and, our day-to-day, the way people think and on that day-to-day basis. So not to get all moral and throw values out there, but – yeah, it does play a role, right?
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I do think it does play a role. That certainly is true. And I haven't, like I said, I haven't heard anything, any rumblings from Mayor Ganim. And I would also think, not to, I don't want to draw conclusions or anything, but I think you're right. I think the shift from having online gambling and sports betting certainly kind of takes away the need to have a casino per se. But also, this is a big year for Mayor Ganim. You know, he's trying to go for reelection, and I think he's probably going to be very focused on issues that specifically have to do with Bridgeport. And that casino, obviously, yes, it would help Bridgeport, but it also really is speaking to the whole state. And even people from out of state. So I think he's probably going to focus on more Bridgeport-centered issues, especially during a campaign year. So this was also in our news this week. Another 6 Broadway shows closed over the weekend, including The Music Man, which was starring Hugh Jackman. A Strange Loop shut down, even though it just won a Pulitzer and was the 2022 Tony for Best Musical. And it all comes down to COVID still undermining the ticket sales, bringing down the curtain for a lot of other musicals. And we saw some others that closed down in early January. So it's pretty troubling. And so Dan Onofrio is here this morning with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And Dan, even though you don't oversee New York City, there are several theaters within what the BRBC oversees, of course, right there in Bridgeport. Are we seeing anything similar? Are we struggling to keep ticket sales at least at pre-pandemic levels? Are you having any of those discussions? Are there any concerns there? Like, I know the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater, they seem fine. But what about, like, the Bijou Theater or some of the other theaters in Bridgeport?
Yeah, I can't speak for all the theaters, but I will tell you that the last arts, culture, and tourism the results that we received from the Fairfield County Cultural Alliance, the numbers have not creeped up to pre-pandemic levels in terms of, generally speaking, with people going to theaters and to shows and things of that nature here in Fairfield County. Now, they were trending up as of, when we saw the report at the end of last summer. Then, of course, the winter hit, and, I think people are just, because we're bundled up and inside, I think definitely, the flu and the pandemic and, I think it's part of, our habits, right, in terms of going out to shows and things of that nature. I was in New York City for the holiday season for a little bit, and, annually we take the kids to go see a show. I did see a lot of the shows closing down And certainly New York City was not as jamming. I was there about three or four times over the holidays. It was not as busy as it typically is. So, I do think the pandemic has impacted some of these things. But at the same time, Lisa, I would also add, going to shows, I think, we talked about the culture and the next generation and how they do things. And what I find interesting is the going out to shows just isn't a thing with the next generation. You know, even going to the movies, for that matter, they stream so much.
The movies break my heart.
Right at their
Yes.
Yeah, everything's at their fingertips. And it's great that everything's at their fingertips. But at the same time, it takes away a little bit from these overarching experiences. And, my kids are like, oh, do we have to go to a show? I'm like, yes, we have to go to a show. We've been doing this since we're two, and it was a great show, we're fighting for everyone's attention. And I think all the theaters across the country are probably doing the same thing with driving acts. And, it's been a few years since we've seen the Rockettes, but I remember this is before the pandemic, we went to see the Rockettes at Radio City for the Christmas Spectacular. Mm-hmm. And it was so different than, the one I saw a few years prior to that. And they had all these halogen images and, lasers and, and you just see they're just trying to get the next generation's attention with how they do these productions. And it's fair. It's right that they do that, obviously, because they have to survive. But it's just different nowadays. Let's go to a show on a Friday night. They don't think that way. But we have gems in Bridgeport. The Bijou Theater, awesome. The Fairfield Theater Company, awesome. You mentioned the Amp, live music is not going anywhere. I think all these bands are excited to be back on the road. But we need to support our local artists too, and at the Klein and at the Downtown Cabaret, and we'll continue to do so. That's why I don't think the investment, we were talking about the Majestic Theater and the other theater downtown, I don't know, the sustainability of putting money into a theater
I think
we could come up with a better use.
Yeah, and you make such a good point, Dan, that the times are changing, right? It really takes, parents like you, or even we were just talking to our son about his birthday in the summer, and I said to him, I think it'd be really fun to go take you to Lion King on Broadway. And his first reaction was like, well, why? I'm like, no, stop. Let me tell you, it's magical. All right, listen, kid, it's magical. I mean, that's you're right. I just don't think it's, unless you sort of push it or unless you get them into it at a young age, it's just not something. Concerts, I don't think will ever go anywhere. Live music will never go anywhere. People are always going to love an artist. Artists are always going to go on the road, so that will always do well. But the idea of like going to the theater, watching a play, seeing a comedian. Things like that. It's harder to attract this next generation to it. You're right.
We had Tracy Morgan at the Stress Factory this weekend. Hilarious. She's definitely, Tracy Morgan.
It's Tracy Morgan, right?
We were talking to friends. We're like, oh, you can just watch the videos on YouTube. I'm like, it's not the same, when you see them in person. So it was just kind of interesting how.
But, Dan, that's interesting because I didn't know Tracy Morgan was here. I did not know that Tracy Morgan was in Bridgeport this past weekend. And I'm wondering, I'm kind of mad. I didn't know that was going on. That would have been a really fun thing to do. Do you feel like... how are we advertising theater today? How are we doing that? Unless you seek places out, unless you go and and maybe that's a question more that I have to go and talk to the theater about. But, unless you're going and consistently looking at what shows are coming up, that's a big get. I mean, Tracy Morgan, that's awesome.
Yeah, and the show was sold out. I think it was sold out all weekend. But you're right. I mean, there are acts that come through and – I take part responsibility as the local chamber. We don't do a great job. We do a good job, but we don't do a great job of getting all of these shows and opportunities for people to understand what's going on. People right away think, okay, it's the weekend, I'm out of here. And they go someplace else. And the pandemic helped in some way.
Yeah.
Because people decided to look in their backyard versus getting on a plane or driving 4 hours somewhere.
True.
So that's been helpful. But the state, we do need to do a better job of marketing our assets. I take full responsibility, for the greater Bridgeport region. We do a good job, but we don't do a great job. And we've been talking a lot about that. And hopefully we'll be able to continue to evolve and come up with some really good solutions to get our local folks that live and work in the area more connected with the assets that exist right here in Bridgeport.
Maybe I can help with that, Dan. You should, if you don't mind staying on the line. I was going to say, if you could stay on hold, we are going to go to traffic and weather and then news. I have an idea for you. Maybe we could do something here on the show more consistent that would help with that a little bit. Do you mind holding?
No.
All right, cool. Chris, if you could just put Dan Onofrio on hold, I'm gonna chat with him in the commercial break. But Dan, I appreciate you, and I thank you so much for always giving us insight into what's going on with our businesses, our surrounding community, and especially looking at what's going on right next door in New York. I appreciate your perspective this morning. Good morning, Scott. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you? How was your holidays? Good?
Everything has been fine. Yeah, everything's been really good. What about you and your beautiful family? How's everybody doing?
Yeah, we've been great. We've been great. I mean, the weather's been great, right? So far,
yeah.
So good. But we're still in winter season. I don't want everybody to kind of put our guard down. That's kind of why we're here to talk, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's funny because, Scott, you and I were friends prior to the first time I came to one of the emergency management meetings a couple years back in Bridgeport. But wow, what an intense operation and something that takes a lot of bodies, a lot of time, and really making sure that we're prepped as a city and then making sure that those alerts are out to a lot of people. So first of all, have you gotten any inkling of how the winter is going to end up? I know from our own Bill Jackelman, who you know very personally as well, he's kind of hinted that we could have two or three events, some kind of winter storm events this season. I don't exactly know when, how bad they will be, but what are you hearing from your end of things?
Yeah, Bill and I talk, you know, regularly throughout every season, but including Bill, the National Weather Service is also indicating that we could probably see at least maybe one to two storms by the end of this year that are pretty pretty significant. What does that mean, significant? I mean, it doesn't seem that they indicate anything like a large scale, but, you know, anything from 3 inches of snow or above could be significant for any jurisdiction, especially Bridgeport.
True.
So we're preparing, you know, we can simply prepare for the worst, expect the best. And as you alluded to, I mean, our approach here in Bridgeport has been the whole community approach. So, we try to ensure that the community is informed. We try to ensure that, you know, we're paying attention to every possible storm that's coming our way, tracking the storm, keeping an eye on it, making sure that if it's something that, can change, that we're alerted to it. A lot of us in the EOC are obviously it's still on our mind from the Blizzard Nemo back mm-hmm. in 2013, where everything kind of was a game changer when it stalled. So, I mean, we have, good resources. We have good individuals. We have professionals that pay attention to what's going on. We're connected with the National Weather Service. We're connected with Bill Jackelman, Connecticut Weather. Quite frankly, I mean, we try to get as much information out there. And it's meteorologists can tell you it's not an easy business that they're in. So
no,
trying to predict something is not that easy. So, you know, we just try to get as much data as possible and just kind of, again, prepare for the worst, expect the best. And, you know, we've had some mild winter right now. I mean, it's great to get outside, great to do things where it's a little milder than we've had in the wintertime thus far. But, we can't let our guard down. I mean, elderly residents, seniors, folks that have children that have medication, you want to make sure that you have medication on hand. You want to make sure that, your doctor's appointments are scheduled prior to the storm. God forbid if we get one. Just those types of preparations, I think, is in the long run is going to make sure that you're safe and secured and that your family's safe and secured.
So we're talking to Scott Appleby this morning with Emergency Management in Bridgeport. Tell us, Scott, what are sort of the protocols if you need to shut down roads, or what does it look like for street parking? Because that sometimes could be a real problem in Bridgeport.
So usually with the city of Bridgeport, we'll declare a city emergency, which then goes into those parking bans, usually when there's about 6 inches of snow. That's where our plow drivers obviously becomes a little more tricky to navigate the roadways. Mm-hmm. So that's when we'll put out that alert, and we'll basically, for that alert, tell residents they're not allowed to park on any of those designated snow emergency streets. Those are, you could go to our city's webpage, our public facilities webpage at bridgeportct.gov, but those are red signs. They got white signs or red lettering that indicate snow emergency streets. Nobody should be parking on those streets. And then depending on the day, you know, so today being the 18th, we'll, you know, if it was today, we would declare an even side. And we tell people to park on the even side of the street if a storm were to impact us today. So it's usually the day of the week, or depending on if the storm's going to hit us overnight, we may do it the day of the storm. So, and put the alert out the day before. So alternate side of the street is, again, letting our plow drivers be able to clear one side of the street so that you could go on the other side of the street. And, you know, we get it. You know, a lot of neighbors and a lot of folks call us up at the emergency operations center, and they you know, they're complaining that people weren't adhering to the regulation and not moving their cars. It's you know, it's making it more impossible for them to get their road clear. We understand that. That's how we take the whole community approach. You know, we're all in this together, so we really have to, you know, play our part in ensuring that we're following those instructions.
How soon, or rather, how late can people expect to get the call that school is canceled?
Usually schools, I mean, they you know, again, having school kids myself, usually at 5 o'clock in the morning, right? O'clock in the morning, you get that call, and, you know, the kids are actually, I think, up at 4 o'clock waiting for that call as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think, you know, they try to get it out as early as possible. I mean, if they really know that the storm's really going to impact is pretty good. Most school districts, especially Bridgeport School District, will call it a lot sooner. But it's all going to be contingent upon the buses. It's going to be contingent upon what the streets look like. And sometimes it's you know, it may be that 5 o'clock in the morning call as the latest. Earliest, you know, it will be hopefully the night before if we know that conditions are going to warrant school to be canceled or at least postponed.
So, and that's something that they would get an alert on their, the thing I wanted to get is the alerts on their phones. That was something that we really tried to hammer in for people. I think the first time you and I worked together a few years ago on this. If people are not already connected to their alerts, and again, I just want to make something very clear. This is for Bridgeport residents. Would you say if somebody's working in Bridgeport but doesn't live there, should they also sign up for the alerts?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So if you go to our city's website, bridgeportct.gov, mm-hmm. The emergency management page has a section there that residents, people who work in Bridgeport, people who just want to know what's going on in Bridgeport can get those alerts sent to them in, you know, either through a text or an email or potentially a phone call if it's that serious. So those are alerts that will tell, you know, residents to either safeguard in their home. Something's happening in the neighborhood, you know, a hurricane may be coming or a winter storm may be coming, to prepare those types of alerts. In addition to that, every resident, when you get a phone, your home phone or your cell phone, you're immediately registered in what's called CT Alert, which is the Connecticut Alerting System. So you could go to the Connecticut.gov about CT Alert and find out more about that. But that's, you know, throughout, you know, the state of Connecticut, if the state or the governor decides to put out an alert, that alert will go out to everyone. And that is an opt-in. You have to opt out yourself if you don't want to get those alerts. But in Bridgeport, you know, you sign up, you get a text, you get an email, you get a phone call just telling you what's going on. You can follow us through social media. That's usually we'll update those for storm related issues or emergency related issues. And more importantly, you know, just follow the instructions of our first responders and the emergency operations center. I mean, it's not the time to panic. You know, we're here to, you know, our priority obviously is life safety. So we're here to protect you first and then hopefully, you know, protect property as we go along. But the most important thing is, you know, as I tell everybody in all of our trainings is we can replace property. We can't replace lives, so really pay attention to those instructions that we give. We're not trying to scare you. We're trying to make sure, you know, tomorrow's another day, in a sense.
Exactly. Scott Appleby, I appreciate you and everybody with the Emergency Management Team, Director of the Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. I know we'll be talking again, especially once those storms hit us, if they do come this year. Thank you so much for all you do and for coming on WICC.
Melissa, appreciate you. Thank you.
Sounds good. I'll see you soon. That's Scott Appleby again with the City of Bridgeport here on WICC. At the beginning of this month, Eversource and UI brought our utility bills up a little bit, by about 50%, actually. So the average household is going to see about an $80 increase on their utility bills for their billings each month, starting this month. Of course, it's going to be a whole lot more for businesses. So this morning, we wanted to get some energy tips. How do we save some money? And it could be as simple as just looking at your laundry room. Joining us this morning to give us some of this insight is Cindy Bray. And Cindy is a laundry and energy savings expert with tips on how to save some money on energy this winter and throughout the calendar year. Good morning, Cindy. Welcome to WICC. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. First of all, how do you become a laundry and energy expert? Did you start doing a lot of research and trying to figure out how to cut down on costs? Like, what? How do you get that title? It's pretty impressive.
Well, I have always been very passionate about conserving energy, and that's actually what drove me to invent a product that helps people save a whole lot of energy when they're doing laundry.
Mm. So what did you invent?
Oh, well, I invented a laundry gadget that's called Wad Free for Bed Sheets. And what it does is it, you know, when you're doing your laundry, you're washing your sheets and they twist and they tangle and they ball up.
It's pretty much the only reason I can't stand doing my sheets. Yes. I can't
right?
stand
it's
it.
It's everybody's biggest pet peeve. Now, in the washing machine, sometimes they'll coil and they can send that washer off balance, especially those top loaders.
Mm-hmm.
And when they coil like that, they don't come out very clean. But most people have the biggest problem in the dryer.
Yeah.
Where one sheet will wrap itself around everything else in the load. They'll ball up. Things will get trapped inside the sheets. Nothing dries. You have to unravel after the end of the cycle and run the entire load the dryer again and again, which, as it turns out, the dryer is a very inefficient appliance. Even the Energy Star appliances use a lot of energy. I was looking up yesterday in Connecticut, your average rate to run the dryer for an hour. Are you sitting down?
I am.
$1.44 per hour to run the dryer.
My gosh.
So when you have to keep running the dryer again and again because the sheets aren't dry, it adds up quickly.
Yeah,
it does. So what I did is I invented this product called Wad-Free for Bed Sheets. It stops them from wadding up. So in the washing machine, they don't coil. They come out cleaner and your washer stays balanced. And in the dryer, they dry up to 75% faster.
Really?
So it saves a lot of time, money, and a whole lot of energy.
Where can people get Wad-Free for Bed Sheets? Is that something you order online or is that in like retail? Or like, where can you get that?
Wad-Free is available online only. And the best place is, yes, my website, wadfree.com. And it's also on Amazon. But wadfree.com is my website. It has a whole lot more information.
Okay,
but I have a whole lot more tips about how we can save some more energy in the laundry room as well.
I definitely want it. I just want to make sure as soon as I get off the phone with you and into the next commercial break, I can order this Wad-Free, and I want to do it directly from you versus going to Amazon. I want it all to go to you. So is that just how it sounds, WADFREE.com?
That's it. That'll get you there.
Perfect. Just making sure. Okay. So, yes, I'd love some other tips besides using the invention you made, which is I can't wait to now do my sheets, which I never thought I'd say that in my life. What else can we do to cut down on those energy costs just with our laundry?
Yeah, I actually hear that a lot. People are excited to do their laundry when they get Wad-Free. But, yes, let's start talking about some other tips. So my first tip is in the washing machine, where most of the energy goes to heating the water. So my tip is to use cold water for virtually everything. Even if you don't have to worry that your clothes aren't coming out clean or because a lot of the detergent on the market these days is actually formulated to work best in cold water. And just by using cold water, you can save approximately 50 cents per load in energy savings.
Wow. So you've tested that. You've used cold water for stuff that typically you would have to use warm water for, and it's just as effective?
I use nothing but cold.
Got it. Okay. What else can we do?
In the dryer. So as I was saying, the dryer is an energy hog. So here is my biggest tip, and this is going to save you a lot. Don't use high heat. Don't even use warm. Use low. A low heat setting. Even if you have to run that dryer for a longer period of time, you're going to save a lot of energy over running it on high. And as an added bonus, your sheets and your clothes, everything is going to last a lot longer if you wash in cold water and dry on a low heat setting.
Really? So if you if you do it at a low heat, you're saying it doesn't it still will take about the same amount of time, or if you had to add minutes, you're talking about you're not doing it on low heat for 3 hours. You're talking it's still going to be within that hour and a half range.
It will take longer to dry your clothes and your sheets on a low heat setting, but it will use a lot less energy than if you're running it on a high heat setting. So at the end of the day, you've used a lot less energy if you're running it on low.
Now, for
and
both
if you
of these,
use Wad-Free for bed sheets, even on low heat, you're going to be shocked at how quickly they dry.
Wow. Last quick thing, Cindy, for both of these, using the cold water, not so much that one, but for the dryer, are these still effective if you have a large load? Like, does it matter how big your loads are?
Yes. No, I recommend filling your machines to capacity, which doesn't mean overstuff. You don't want to overstuff your appliances. However, it's like a dishwasher. If you're only running a few items at a time, you're using a lot more energy and a lot more water to do that cycle. So I recommend you do fill your machines to their manufacturer's capacity.
These are some really great tips. Cindy, is there anything else you want to add?
Look at your billing. If you are off-peak hours, are from 8 p.m. until noon and on weekends. So if you can wait to do your laundry until after 8 p.m., which may be a little bit late for some, but do laundry on the weekends, and you save a lot of money just by the time of day that you are doing your laundry.
I've heard that before. Didn't realize it had to be that late at night, though. So, or on the weekends. That's a good point. Wow, Cindy, I learned an awful lot. I could tell you right now, I'm going to definitely be ordering the Wad-Free for bed sheets and then trying some of these new things and see if it makes a difference. It sounds like it does in the long run. So I thank you so much for your insight.
It absolutely will. About 10% of your energy bill is going to doing laundry. So these tips will help you out instantly.
Wow. I appreciate the tips. Cindy Bray, laundry and energy savings expert here on WICC. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stay warm.
Thanks. You too.
It's time to get out and explore. Melissa in the Morning brings you science you may not know on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Have you ever heard of the term dog-directed speech? Apparently, we could be doing that. If you're someone who talks to your dog, and you can't see me in the studio, but my hand is raised all the way up to the ceiling, I talk to my dogs every single day. In fact, to the point that I've given them their own voices. This is Trusty's voice, and this is Willow's voice. Yes, this is a true story. Both my dogs have a voice. Good morning, David Mestre, back for Science You May Not Know. What's the deal with this? I've never even heard of a dog-directed speech.
We need to study you, Melissa, because you are doing precisely what this study was talking
about.
Gosh,
how many times have I heard we need to study you, Melissa, because you're the most bizarre. Yes, well,
No, and it's pretty amazing. Oh, yeah, it goes directly at what some of these researchers were finding. This idea that we actually have this kind of what's called dog-directed speech. It's a style of speaking to our dogs. And it was really kind of interesting. And so the way that they kind of studied this was that, you know, they had testers, you know, that would basically record people as if they were talking to a dog. And they showed them different pictures of dogs. And the dogs were either older dogs or, you know, puppies, that kind of thing. And what they found was that these people would actually start to use sort of this style of speaking that they dubbed dog-directed speech. And this type of speech actually has a lot of similarities to what's called infant-directed speech. Like you're actually talking to an infant. Like you change your pitch. Maybe the tempo of your speech is slower. Maybe your vowels are a little clearer. And so this was really kind of interesting. And so the researchers were kind of like asking this question, are we doing this because the dog triggers in us this infant-directed speech response? Is it because we think it's like an infant to us? And so these were sort of some really interesting questions. And so the recordings, though, of the dog-directed speech were played to a bunch of dogs. And so the people weren't there, but the recording, the sound of that voice was in the room with a speaker. And so the sounds of these voices were played to the dogs. And so what they found was that if it was an older dog, I hate to spoil this for you, if it was an older dog, it didn't matter.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Wow. You could
still get a response from the dog, and either using your human-directed speech voice or your dog-directed speech voice. But where it did matter, and this was really kind of interesting, where it did matter was with puppies.
Oh, and that's so interesting. Okay, why is that?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. This is really kind of cool. So for some reason, the puppy was responding more to a higher pitch sound, the higher pitch in the voice modulation of the person that was speaking in this dog-directed speech, which is really kind of interesting. So we don't know whether there's something within the brain wiring of younger dogs and infants and just like these really developing brains that responded better to that higher pitch and that modulated tone that is kind of like the way that we speak to an infant. It was really kind of, and it was funny though, because when they were actually recording the humans, if the picture was of a puppy, they actually used that tone. Like
really?
They didn't think about it. They were like, oh, that's such a cute, you're so good, you're such a great puppy, you're so fantastic. They were like using it anyway. And so we don't know whether, wait a second, the features of a puppy may actually be triggering in us this infant-directed speech response. And we didn't even know it.
So what about if you're somebody who doesn't talk to your dog? Let's go to the more, I guess you'd call them, normal, because I know I'm not that. So, like, what about them? Like, was there a big difference? And does directive speech, like, change your dog? Like, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Like, what does that mean?
That's really interesting, because, I mean, I think the thing is that, you know, the way that we, you know, our infant-directed speech, we think is to help our infant acquire language. Okay, that's probably part of the language acquisition process. But the dog doesn't have language. There's no way that a dog is going to have the kind of language that we have. So why do we do that? And more interestingly, is why is a dog responding to that? And so that's still open research. Like one school of thought is that that the puppy response is kind of mimicking the infant response, because puppies, like infants, are just sponges. They're learning. And so the way that our dog-directed speech is packaged helps the puppy learn that better. But it's a big debate. You know, do they really understand the word and what it means? Because that was the thing that the researchers were worried about. They didn't want to actually have the test subject and the dog in the same room, because a dog, they're incredible at seeing different types of cues that you give, like body and the way that you pose and yeah. other things. And so we just wanted to see, does the speech matter? And at least
And I've heard that before, David, that like you could say to a dog, you know, like my dog's name is Trusty. And I remember, I can't remember who told me this, but they were like, he won't even know like the Rusty part of it. Like he just knows it's a strong T name. So if I called him Tigger, he would still respond. And it's funny, some dogs I have noticed are like that. Like you could literally just change the rest of but they hear that strong first mm-hmm. letter. Trusty's not like that. If I yell Tigger, 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 he's not going to know what you're talking about. Like, but if I yell Trusty, he knows that's his name. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that was also found, there was some other research that was done, that it mattered whether the voice that was in the speaker was the owner's voice or just anybody else's voice.
That makes sense, too.
And that made a big difference, too. So the dogs, they could recognize the owner's voice. That's my human. That's that sound.
Well, it's like children, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen, it's so funny, but it's the opposite for kids, actually. My son will get directions from a stranger, and he's alert. I'm like, hey, Chase, could you clean up? Hey, Chase, could you clean up? And he just tunes me out. So it is interesting, like,
I would
dogs can recognize
maybe a
that.
Chase-directed language. You know, it might be like a different kind of language.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if it matters what pitch I'm in. I think it matters if I pair, hey, honey, can you please put your dishes away? By the way, I just made you cookies. I think that's, for some reason, that seems to work very, very well. Treats paired with direction seems to work very well for toddlers. But, you know, everybody's got their own way of doing things. This is very, very interesting, David. And I'm wondering, really, I think a lot of people, if they're being honest, talk to their dogs. I know for me, it just feels natural. You know, there's another being. There's another something in the house.
Exactly. And I think as the dog gets older, it may be that dog-directed tone maybe matters less. It's just, you know, hey, go outside.
Yeah, like I know. I think they become more routine, too. You know, like I think they, you know, whether it's that they audibly can't hear you as well or whatever, they're just getting older. They're also used to a routine. You know, when you look at humans, we change. What do dogs really go through? Other than maybe moving or maybe if you have a baby, like their lives don't change. They literally do the same thing almost every single day. So it almost becomes routine. Like what more do they have to learn kind of a thing? So that's why they say don't teach an old dog new tricks because it just – they're like, yeah, we've tapped out of listening. So,
yeah,
you know,
but probably for them, it's just like, hey, you don't need to use that voice with me anymore. I got it.
Yeah, I got it. Like literally, you open the door. I know I'm going outside.
I know what I'm supposed to do.
Very interesting, though, David. Definitely made me think this morning. I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I won't be able to do my test here because I have a cat, and my cat doesn't really listen to me at all. So.
Yeah, that's par for the course for cats. Yeah, just saying. Olaf doesn't listen either. Thanks, David. I appreciate you. Science you may not know right here on WICC.